Here in the middle toward the front, if you're having a hard time coming in. So this is Architecture and Society, Architecture 308. My name is Larry Speck. At the beginning of class today, we're going to go through 10 procedural issues that will kind of let you know what you're getting into here. We want a full disclosure, exactly what all the requirements of the course are going to be, so you can make a decision whether this is the right thing for you or not. So the first of those procedural issues has to do with me trying to figure out who I'm talking with here. So I'm going to give you several categories, if you could raise your hand where you fit in one of those categories. So how many of you actually are architecture majors? One? That's about how it's supposed to be. Most, it is a required course for architecture majors, but they take it in the fall, so you're out of sequence. But that's cool. How many people are here thinking, maybe I might want to be an architecture major, and you're trying it out? Raise your hand. Okay, there are a few of those. Okay, how many people are taking this as a VAPA requirement? Yes, lots of those. So of those who are taking it as a VAPA requirement, how many of you are engineering students? Okay, how many of you are liberal arts students? How many are natural science students? How many are business students? See, this is fantastic. I get complete spread across the entire university. How many are communication students? A few. And then there are, I'm sure, others. Okay. So one other question. How many of you are not taking this because it's a requirement of any sort? You're just taking it for the hell of it. Okay. That's cool. Great. All right. Procedural issue number two, and this is about the room. So last semester, oh my God, we had a horrible problem. They like enrolled 30 people more than there were seats in the class. And we dealt with that all semester, horrible, sitting on the floor, having to do tests in two rooms, horrible problem. So I raised hell about that and screamed and hollered. And so this semester, we have really reduced enrollment in the class. And we have 25 people in every section, so all the sections are equal sizes, and we should have plenty of room in the lecture hall. So that should be a big improvement. However, it still is fairly full in the room, and that means that when people come late, they may have class before and they have to walk across campus. If all the available seats are in the middle, like they are here, and all the ones on the aisle are completely filled, like they are, then it's very hard for those people to find a spot. So it would really be great if you could fill up the ones in the middle and leave the ones at the edge for people who might have to come in later. That would really help. Every single class period, pretty much, there's going to be a handout. You got four handouts today. There's usually just one handout. And it'll be on those little music stands out front. And just as you walk in, be sure you get a handout. I've tried lots of different ways of distributing those handouts. We send them out electronically. Ask people to print them out for the class. They don't show up in class, so we make them show up every day in class. You need that in front of you for the lecture because it has data on it. It has names of architects, dates, locations, and when I say something like Brunelleschi and you try to put that, you don't know how to spell that, it'll all be right there in front of you. So very important that you pick up your handout on your way into class. It's a pretty nice room. They actually like for us to try to take care of this room, like no food in here, and I know it's tempting, but no food in here, and also if you try not to leave junk in here, just whatever you take in, try to take it out with you as well. It seems like today, so maybe the Daily Texan had an insert or something, so there are all these little things around everywhere. Yeah, it's good if we can leave the room nice and clean because it's a nice room. Also, there's one characteristic of this room that's good and that's also bad. The seats are really soft and cushy. Have you noticed that? Really kind to your butt, you know, really comfortable. And in class, we're going to be looking at a lot of slides. And in order for you to see my dazzling, beautiful slides in full, glorious color, we need to turn the lights down. So the combination of the lights being turned down, that soft seat, cuddling your butt really, really sweetly. For some people, it makes them drowsy, like they might fall asleep. I want to tell you, I hate it when someone snoozes in my class. I hate it. And I'm absolutely not beyond kicking you in the shin. I will do that. Or embarrassing the hell out of you. Everyone see that person snoozing over there? God, look, their mouth is like, they're drooling, I think. So I advise you, if you're kind of, I don't know, a little drowsy, 9:30 in the morning, maybe just rolled out of bed, you're still a little drowsy, and you think, I'm probably going to fall asleep in class. Go home and take a nap. Don't fall asleep in class, because I will call you out. I make no apologies about that. Okay, we have a no laptop policy in the class, which means, and really this was the students who said this, but like I say, the lights get turned down, people have their laptops up, and there's the light glowing away from them, and it's very distracting to students behind, and so we pretty much have a no laptops policy. If someone has a real learning disability, and they need their laptop to take notes, they just cannot do it with a pen and their fingers, then we will make special accommodations for you. We'll put you either on the back row, or we'll put you against the wall, or someplace where we won't be distracting to other people. But you need to ask permission to do that. So either ask me or ask your TA if you want to use a laptop. Otherwise, no laptop policy. The slide that you couldn't see up on the screen because the lights are spoiling it, we will get that fixed next time. And when you come in the room next time, there will be a little chart there that tells you how to sit in your TA cohorts. So there's six TAs. So the front here, this half of the room, is one TA. The middle is another TA. The back is another TA. And the same thing on the other side of the room. And this is very important that you sit in your TA cohorts for several reasons. One reason is you'll get to know the people who are in your discussion section. We're very big on making this a community of learning. You're meant to, you know, there is no such thing as, it's not cheating when you share an idea or it's not at all. We're all here to kind of learn together, and it works best if you have colleagues that you're learning from in this class and that you're hearing their perception, which might be different from your perception. This is it's a VAPA requirement. That's visual and performing arts. One thing about arts is we all have different perceptions. And one thing that's really good is you understanding how somebody else is seeing that, which may be different from the way you're seeing that. So it's good if in your discussion sections you're making some buddies, some colleagues, some people you can talk to about this. And if you see the same people around you in lecture time, then that reinforces that. So it's good kind of intellectually, socially, in terms of interaction in the class. But there's also a really practical side to it, because every class period there's going to be a question I ask you. And you're going to write a little response on a 3x5 card, which you will need to bring to class every day, a 3x5 card. And you will give it to your TA at the end of class. So you need to be near that TA, otherwise you'll be scrambling to try to find your TA on the other side of the room, and that'll be a mess. So you need to sit in your TA cohort, and you need to be able to identify, I need to give this to my TA. Now we're going to start that on Thursday. Many of you will already have had your TA discussion sections between now and Thursday. Some of you will not, but if you sit in your right cohort space, you ought to be able to find your TA to give that Twitter card to And I'll talk more about those in a minute. Okay, so that's the second point about using the room. The third procedural issue is about handouts. As I said, there'll be a handout every time. You have in your hot little hands a course description, a course outline, a policy on all kinds of things, in particular makeups, and a poll. Those four handouts. The first description is something you should read after you go home today, and there's information on that I will not be covering in the class today, but I'll be going over a number of things in that course description, just telling you about it, but be sure you go home and read that. The course outline tells you what happens every class period all through the semester. Now, there may be a little flexibility there. We may move something here or there. And in fact, we have one kind of significant move that I want you to write on your course outline right now, where it says February, the week of February 24th and 26th. On February 26th, it says we have a test that day. That test will actually be on February 24th. Same week, but it'll be on Tuesday instead of Thursday. So be sure you make that change. That test is on February 24th instead of February 26th. There may be other small changes through the semester. If so, I'll notify you on those. But every time you got those handouts, very important to look at them. On the policy on makeups, you should read that carefully. Basically, if you're sick, if you have a family emergency, if it's a religious holiday for you, no problem. We are happy, happy, happy to give you a makeup. If you don't have one of those three excuses, it's probably not going to be a pretty sight. So if you say, I'm going to be partying really hard the night before, I think I won't be in the right mood to take a test the next day, that's probably not going to work out. If you are so incredibly smashed that you have to go to the emergency room and you have documentation of your illness, that's another thing. Okay, so the other thing is you have this poll. Don't fill that out now. At your leisure, fill that out and give it to your TA in your first discussion section. And that will help us know a little bit about your background and who we're dealing with in the course. Okay, third procedural issue was handouts. Fourth procedural issue is text for the course. There are three texts. The first one we'll read is Experiencing Architecture. The second one is Thermal Delight in Architecture. The third one is The Place of Houses. Those on your course outline, it tells you exactly when you're supposed to read those by. And in the case of the first two, we're reading the whole book, all of Experiencing Architecture, reading the whole book, all of Thermal Delight, but we're only reading about half of the book, The Place of Houses, and what pages you're supposed to read are on that course outline and what date you're supposed to read them by. Now, your TAs may amend that somewhat. If you're going to be discussing that book in your TA section, they may say, I want you to read the first half of that by this date and the second half by this date so we can discuss it in class. That's normal. They're not violating any agreements in the course. That's each TA section may deal with that slightly differently. But you should absolutely have the whole book read by the dates that are given in the course outline. And the first book you're reading is Experiencing Architecture by Steen Eiler Rasmussen. You can start reading that immediately. All three of those books are available at the co-op or Amazon. Pretty easy to get them, I think. Okay. Fifth procedural issue, reading and attendance. I've been teaching this course a long time. I'm all for everyone being as successful in this course as they possibly can be. So I'm going to give you a little advice here on how to be successful in this course. And this is gleaned from students telling me this over a very long period of time. There are three things that are super important for you to be successful in this course. The first one is getting your butt in the seat in class. And this is, I don't understand this completely. I'm very open-minded about distance learning. We have all of the lectures are recorded, and they'll be on the website, and they're totally available to you. All the visuals that we'll be looking at, with great expense and time, we get all of those visuals up on the website. You can see them. There was a couple of semesters where we experimented with, if you want to take this course as distance learning, you don't ever want to come to class, you just want to get it via the web, that's fine with us. And we did it as an experiment. And we had about maybe 30 students for three semesters in a row. And the average of those 30 students' grades compared to the students who were in class, they average a letter grade lower than the students in class. They didn't seem to be dumbass students. They seemed to be perfectly normal students. And believe me, there were a few dumbasses who came to class. But the fact was, coming to class, it's a different thing. You see the images, you hear the words. It's a kind of orchestrated experience. And if you're sitting there with your recording and with your, it's not the same. There are things I can point out with the laser pointer that, you know, you're seeing that more particularly, that don't show up, can't show up in the visual material on the web. Believe me, you're getting a half-assed version of the class if you don't have your butt in the seat and you're trying to get the information from the class off the web. So that's my first bit of advice. Get your butt in the seat. The second bit of advice is you need to take the reading seriously. There are plenty of people these days who think reading is always a suggested exercise, that it's not that important. They'll probably cover that in class anyway. No, not going to happen. The lecture material is, we got tons of material we have to cover in the lecture. But the stuff in the reading, I'm not going to repeat that. You're smart enough to read that and get that, so it'll be supplementary and we'll make references back and forth to it. But we're not covering the books in the lecture. You've got to get the book material by reading the book. And I will be very frank about the fact it's not like reading the newspaper where you're just kind of gleaning a little bit from it. You need to read it with some comprehension. So pretty serious about those books. All three of them are well-written books. They're ones that, you know, people in the class have been very appreciative of in previous semesters. I've called out all the rotten books I tried that didn't work. These three seem to be ones that people respond positively to. So it's not a huge amount of reading. It may seem to you like a huge amount of reading, but it's important to do the reading. And then before every test, I'll give you specific things about the reading that I want you to pay attention to. So we want to make you as successful as possible on that aspect of the reading in the class. So attendance, reading. The third thing is you need to be able to think and observe. Again, it's a VAPA course. It's about the arts. It is not just black and white. It is not just data. It is not just facts. Some of it is data, some of it is facts, and some of the testing will absolutely be about facts and data. And most of you will do really well on that part of it. You guys are good about facts and data. You're trained. They taught you that in high school. But what we're looking for more is thinking and observing, really seeing something, looking deeply, deeply, and seeing something. And also thinking about it. How do I perceive it? What do I think? How do I react? So it is about thinking and observing. And some of you, that may be a kind of something that you haven't been expected to do before. For some of you, you'll just shine at that immediately. So there are those three things that make you successful. Attendance, reading with comprehension, and this combination of thinking and observing. Okay, the sixth of these procedural issues. Let's talk about grading. And I want to be as clear about this as possible. The legislature of the state of Texas requires me within the first 12 days of class to tell you exactly how you'll be evaluated. So I'm doing that right here and now. It's also in your course description. There will be three tests in the course. They're all listed on the course outline. That one on February, the first one on February 24th instead of February 26th is the only change in that outline. Okay, so three tests. Each of them are worth 15% of your final grade. So the good news is these are not, you know, killer, your whole grade relies on this one performance in one test. There are three of them. They're only worth 15% each. You could actually make a 50 on that first test and still make an A in the course. That's probably not going to happen, but it's statistically possible. So they're not killer tests where it's all make or break on this one grade. Likewise, there's a final. It also is only worth 15% of the grade in the course. Again, not a killer final. So four exams total, each worth 15%, total of 60% of your grade. There are five of what we call think sheets, and there is another exercise we call a scavenger hunt, and those will be done totally in your discussion sections, and you'll get all the prompts and all the advice from them in your discussion section. There are six of those, the scavenger hunt and five think sheets. You do all six of those exercises, and you can drop your lowest grade from that. So that gives you a little discretion if you're not real good at one of those. Four of those exercises have to do with you choosing a building at the beginning of the semester that's going to be your building all the way through the semester. And you will do research on it, and you'll get to know it, and then you'll evaluate it in three different think sheets according to a prompt. Now you're supposed to evaluate it on these issues. So you'll choose one building, and you'll get to know that building really well. And you will do four of those six exercises on your chosen building. In total, all of those six exercises, after you drop one of the grades, it'll be five grades, and those are worth 20% of your grade in the end. And again, your TAs will discuss those more thoroughly with you in your discussion section. Then the final 20% of the class grade is from participation. And participation is a lot of different vehicles. One of them is these Twitter cards I mentioned a minute ago. And this is every single class period, I'm going to be asking you a question. I might ask it at the beginning of the lecture, I might ask it midway through the lecture, I might ask it at the end of the lecture. But pretty much every class will have a question. And you will then respond to that question on the 3x5 card that you bring to class. And we're looking for 140 characters. That's why we call it a Twitter card. So it's supposed to be short. If you start writing on, fill up the front of the card, turn it over, writing on the back of the card, you're not doing it right. Supposed to be short, just 140 characters. Don't start counting the characters. We're not, you know, we don't worry about that. But it should be short, and it is meant to get your response to what you heard in the lecture. The point of this is a really, really important exercise to me. This may be the most important exercise in the whole class. I want you to do well on your test. I want you to, you know, do your scavenger hunt and do your research and be thorough with all that. But what I really want is for you to engage with the subject matter. When we're talking about something in class, I want you to think about it. I want you to be critical. Do I think this is bullshit? Do I think this is brilliant? Is this an amazing insight? Does this not matter to me at all? And I want to know exactly what you think about that. No bullshit in the Twitter cards. No kissing up to your TA or to me. No telling us what you think we might want to hear. I want your frank, unadulterated perspective on those Twitter cards because I want you to engage in the subject matter. It is not, as I said, black and white material. It is, you know, some people use this as a pejorative word. It's subjective material. That's not a pejorative word. That means it's material that you might exercise some judgment about. Judgment, that you might have values that lead you to draw some conclusions about that. These are super important things. values, judgment. And that's what, in the arts, it's all about that. It's not about black and white. So I want you to engage with this subject matter. I want to know how you're responding to it. And that's what the Twitter card is about. So you will write that little Twitter card at the end of class. I'll try to give you a few minutes. It shouldn't be, you know, don't overthink it. You're just supposed to be responding to that. Then you hand it to your TA. The TAs will read those Twitter cards pretty much immediately. Each TA will send me, I don't know, 6 or 8 of the best Twitter card responses. I will read all of those from all the TAs, and then I will call out maybe 8 or 10 that I will read back to you the next class period. So you'll be able to hear, how did other people respond to that? What did other people think about that? So Twitter cards, very important thing, and that's part of class participation. You're participating in the class. We could try with a group of 300 students here, we could try to have a discussion. That just flat doesn't work. I have tried that. And the only people who talk in front of 300 people are the people who like to talk in front of 300 people. And that's a very small subset of the whole class. And it's maybe not coincident with the most insightful subset in the class. So with the Twitter cards, we can find the most insightful voice in the class, and I can feed that back to you. You can hear what other people are thinking at the very highest level of perception in the class. And that's what the Twitter cards are about. Okay, so of the participation grade, which is 20% of the total grade, 10% is the Twitter cards, 5% is is a Pechacucha-like exercise that you do in your discussion section. So that building that you chose, you will do a very short presentation on that building in your discussion section. And honestly, people love those. They love doing them. They love hearing about them in general, except for some people who are a little shy and they hate it. They hate it. But hey, it's part of the requirement of the course. For you to know about this building and for you to get up in front of your peers and tell them what is cool about this building, what is important about this building, what have I observed about this building. And that's participation. That's you sharing some particular knowledge you've acquired about your particular building. And you're probably going to know more about that building than anyone in the room, maybe even more than the TA, because you've been researching it in particular. So that's an important part of participation, 5% of the total grade. 5% of the grade is also your activity and discussion section. Are you there? Are you engaged in the discussion? Or do you sit like a lump on the back row and, you know, basically look bored? Then you don't get that 5%. Those points are gone. So 20% participation grade, 10% is Twitter cards, 5% is the Pechacucha presentations, and 5% is participation in discussion section. Okay. Everybody know how you're going to be graded? Any questions? Okay. The 7th procedural issue is office hours. I actually love talking to students in architecture and society. I like having office hours. My office hours are 12:30 to 1:30, Tuesday, Thursday. So it's a couple hours after this class. 12:30 to 1:30, Tuesday, Thursday. And my office is in Goldsmith Hall. That's the main architecture building. It's G-O-L, Goldsmith, 4.142B. Now, just so, I really hate it when people are like waiting outside for office hours. So if you will email me in advance and say I'd like to come by in office hours next Tuesday, I will clue you in if it's going to be a long wait or maybe it'd be better to come Thursday instead. It's really good if you notify me I want to come by in office hours. But if you don't, that's fine. Just show up. Also, if you can't make it to office hours, you have a conflict, a class or something like that, then feel free to just email me and we'll find another time. And my email address is lspeck, for Larry Speck, lspeck, and then at austin.utexas.edu. lspeck@austin.utexas.edu. Okay, in general, it's good to talk to your TAs about grading issues and about assignments that they assigned and due dates and even things like excused absences. These are all good things to talk to about your TA. We have fantastic TAs. Three of them right here. The other three, they're around somewhere. But they're really, really good TAs, and they're going to be super helpful to you. So a lot of things, just deal with it with your TA. That's great. But if there's ever, like if you've dealt with it with your TA on the grade and you still feel like I'm just not satisfied, then come talk to me. I'd welcome that. That's fine. And definitely anything in the lectures, in your reading that you're confused about, you don't understand. Those of you who might be thinking about architecture as a major, you want to talk about what it's like as a profession, sure, absolutely. Come by in office hours. Be delighted to talk to you. Okay, eighth procedural issue, the general format. It's generally a lecture class. So you come in here, and I will blather on for about an hour and 10 minutes. And I will try to make it as entertaining as possible, believe me. But it's a general lecture format. Again, as I said, no laptops. It's also kind of a visual class. Conventional note-taking works really well in this class. And my lectures are pretty well organized, and I will even give you the first point, the second point, the third point, and you'll be able to get those things down. So I try to make it so it's easy for note-taking. You might want to sketch a little. Hey, draw. Even though you're not architecture majors, you might try that, sketching the visual material. Sometimes that's cool. Ninth procedural issue is the website. We have two web resources for the class. One is larryspeck.com, which will have all the lectures, the audio for the lectures. It will have all the visual material up there. Also on larryspeck.com, there's a ton of other architecture information. So if you just want to browse around, it's a pretty good resource. That is, it gets about 16,000 hits a month on larryspeck.com. Obviously, it's not just this class. It's a resource internationally for people to come and look at architecture and see things that have visual resources they might not get otherwise. So feel free to browse around on larryspeck.com. And then we also will use Canvas, which is pretty damn good, a lot better than Blackboard was. So a lot of the work in your discussion section and your grading and assignments and some of the procedural things, selecting your building, things like that, Pechacucha times, those will be done through Canvas. Okay, the other thing is there will be on larryspeck.com, there will be sample quizzes, handouts you might have missed. Those resources are there as well. Tenth and final procedural issue. We will, from time to time, have active learning exercises. So it's not just sitting in your seat, watching pictures, me talking to you. But we'll go out and we'll look at something. And this is kind of new. We haven't been doing this in the past. I've taught this class forever, but this is something new we're trying to do. So on Saturday, this next Saturday, and this is in your course outline, it is on next Tuesday. It says we will not have class on Tuesday, what is it, January 27th? We will not have class. Do not show up here on Tuesday, January 27th. Instead, we're replacing that with an active learning exercise on Saturday. So this Saturday, January 24th, I will spend all day in hour slots with smaller groups of you giving a campus tour. And you will, next Thursday, that will be up here, exactly what the time slot is for that. There'll be a slide up at the beginning of class, and it will tell you, you know, there's one that meets from 9:30 to 10:30, then another one 10:45 to 11:45, then another one 12, you know, throughout the day. You'll be assigned to a certain tour to participate in according to your TA. So there'll be six different slots for the six different TA cohorts. But if you have a conflict in that time slot, but you can make it to another one, that's not a problem. Just go to one of the tours, and they're all going to be the same, so it won't make a big difference. But try to go to the one that's in your TA cohort so you can see your TA and fellow students and so on. So that will be on Saturday. I realize that there may be some of you are out of town. We do that early in the semester because, hell, you just got here from home. Surely you're not going home the first weekend of the semester. So hopefully people will be in town and they'll be able to take advantage of that. So that will be this Saturday, and we'll meet on the steps of the main building and do a little tour for an hour, and you'll see that on Thursday. Okay, I think I did all the procedural issues. Anybody got any questions on any of that? Yes, loud. So the building that you work on, your TAs will give you a list of buildings. And honestly, you can throw a dart, and that's fine. It doesn't matter that much, but it's also kind of cool if it's a building you know something about or you like or you appreciate in some way. So, but you do research on it. Different TAs will approach it different ways. Some of them will be in Austin, some of them will be in Texas, some of them might be in your hometown, but most of them will probably be ones where you do research on them, like you go to the web or you go to the library or something like that and do research. Okay, so there are a few things, substantive, that we're supposed to deal with today. The first one is, why the heck would you take a class in architecture and society? Why the heck would we teach a class in architecture and society? What are the goals of this class? What are you meant to get out of this class? And I'm going to say there are three things, primarily, that I think you should get out of this class. The first thing is that we're trying to familiarize you with the discipline of architecture. We're trying, and you know something for the note-taking thing? When I say there are three things, and here's the first one, the second one, and the third one, good to get that in your notes. That makes a fantastic test question for me to ask you, what were the three things, or which of these is not one of the three things, or whatever. So, three things we want you to get out of this class. The first is to familiarize you with the discipline of architecture. Why is that important? Isn't everybody kind of familiar? Well, actually, no. The culture that we live in America in the 21st century, we are incredibly, abysmally ignorant about architecture. A couple of years ago, I'm in an airport. They've got the damn TV blaring up there, and it's some inane quiz show. And it's one of these quiz shows where there's some nerdly kind of person who seems to know everything about everything, total trivia nuts. And then they're paired with some celebrity who seems to know nothing about anything but makes wise-ass comments all the time. And so it's meant to be this sort of one team is a celebrity and a nerd, and the other team is another celebrity and a nerd, and it's just kind of dialogue back and forth. And they ask these questions that the nerds always, you're so impressed because they know so much about that. I can't even remember what the name of the show is. But it caught my ear because they ask a question about architecture. So the game show host says, name as many famous architects as you can in the next 20 seconds. And so, you know, the nerd says, Frank Lloyd Wright. Tick, 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 tick. Tick, 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 tick. 20 boring seconds go by. He could only think of one architect, Frank Lloyd Wright. I'll tell you, thank God for Frankie is all I can say, because he's like often the only architect anybody can ever name. Now, if they had asked how many football players can you name, you know, name after name after name, 20, 30, 40 football players, NFL football players you could name. Even if they ask, name famous opera singers, Luciano Pavarotti, Beverly Sills, you know, they'd probably name 6 or 8 or 10 famous opera singers. Even heart surgeons. I mean, they could have come up with more than one name of just about anything. But these people could not come up with but one name of one architect. Abysmally ignorant about architecture. Now, that is not true in other countries. In Europe, those people know a lot about architecture. I was in a group of people with a bunch of Finns, and everybody there spoke Finnish, and nobody spoke English. And so my wife and I were speaking English, everybody else was speaking in Finnish, and we were with these people for 3 days. And, you know, it was not much communication going on. But I finally realized that one, like, 16-year-old kid, he was eavesdropping on our conversation. And so I could tell, this kid knows English. He ain't speaking it, and he ain't showing it, but he knows English. So I start talking to this 16-year-old kid. His English is beautiful. And I, you know, he says, what do you do? I'm an architect. And we start talking about that. Holy moly, this kid knew so much about architecture. He knew international architects. He knew movements in architecture. He knew periods in architecture. He knew Finnish architects. He knew his architects in his hometown, and he had his favorite buildings. And I'm saying, dude, how did you get to know so much about architecture? He says, oh, well, we studied it in school. Yeah, we study music, and we study architecture, and we study art, and we study philosophy. And I mean, you study it like everything else, right? I said, not in America. Nope. Almost zero. Maybe your school had an architecture class. Usually what they call an architecture class is kind of the guy who teaches engineering also teaches it, and it's kind of glorified drafting. But is it architecture? No. Lame, stupid, bad architecture class, usually. There may be exceptions. I don't know of many. But we're abysmally ignorant about architecture. And yet it's this stuff that's around us every day, profoundly influencing what we do. If you don't think so now, believe me, by the end of the semester, you will understand how much this influences you. Often unconsciously, but it influences you. So why are we so ignorant about this? It's crazy. But in fact, that's the truth. So I think, I know it's incredibly important for people to know something about architecture. And this is a chance for us to familiarize you with the discipline. So I personally am a complete architecture junkie. Oh my God, I love this stuff. I love looking at architecture. I love traveling to go see exotic bits of architecture. I love historic architecture. I like contemporary architecture. I like to think about architecture. I like to write about architecture. I like to design architecture. I like to watch it being built. I like to watch people inhabiting it. It's just amazing, fascinating stuff. And a long time ago, I went from being an architecture junkie to being a pusher. And I am now trying to addict as many people as I can to this stuff. And you're the victims this semester. So, I don't know, several semesters ago, I was, you know, worked out in Gregory Gym, went to the sauna. I'm sitting there in the sauna about this time of year, sitting there in the sauna, and this student comes in the sauna, and he's, oh my God, you're my architecture professor. And I'm like, you know, half naked. And he said, well, yeah, it's true. And so he says, well, like, you know, I'm a business major, okay? And I'm taking this as a VAPR requirement. And, you know, I think it'll be a pretty cool class. I'm fine with it. But you know what you said about, like, making us junkies or, like, you know, getting us really interested in it? I don't really think that's going to happen with me because I'm not really that interested. I'm like a business guy. You know, I'm totally into business. And I don't think architecture is anything to business, so I'm not really that interested. But I'll do okay. I'll study. I'll be fine. And I said, dude, you know something? I'm taking you on this semester. I am going to make you love this stuff. You don't think you are, but you're going to love this stuff. So I identified where he sat in the room, and I kept checking in with him. How you going, dude? Now, are you telling me that is not fascinating, what we were just talking about? Are you telling me you're really not interested in that? You tell me that's not relevant to your life? Come on. And, you know, about halfway through the semester, he's like, okay, I'm a junkie. I get it. And sucked him in. Yes. No, it was sincere. Okay. So I am trying to not only familiarize you with the discipline, but make you a junkie. Okay, so why would that be an important thing? I will posit that every single person in this room will have a better, more productive life if they learn how to take architecture as a tool to enhance their life. I know that is the case. So let me tell you a little story. I was in Whole Foods, big mothership Whole Foods downtown, a block away from where I live, so I'm there all the time. I'm standing at the bread counter trying to decide what kind of bread I want, and this tall, bald-headed dude comes up to me, maybe, you know, in his 40s or something, and he says, you're Larry Speck, aren't you? I said, yeah. He said, you know, I took your class in 1987. Said, you know, I love that class. I was a senior, and I was an English major. And if I had not been a senior, I probably would have tried to change my major. I just loved architecture. It was fascinating. But, you know, I was a senior. I was poor. I couldn't afford to, you know, change majors at that point. So I graduated with a degree in English, and then, you know, I couldn't get much of a job that had anything to do with English. But I was always good at computers, so I got a job in IT, and I went to work for a big company helping people fix their computer problems. So I did that 3 or 4 years. And then I hear that the company is going to build a brand new headquarters building, and that they're going to have some of the employees as a client team to work with the architect on the design of this new headquarters building. And he said, this is my chance. I can use all those things that we talked about in architecture and society. I can sort of, you know, exercise my interest in this. I want to be on that damn team. So he goes to his supervisor in IT and he says, you know, if we don't have a representative on that client team, they're going to put all the electrical closets in a bad location. They're not going to have enough Wi-Fi stations. It'll make our life miserable. We need to have somebody on that client team. And his boss said, yeah, you're right. Would you do that? And he said, oh, well, yeah, I guess I could do that. So he gets on this team. And then he, you know, he doesn't really want to talk about electrical closets or Wi-Fi spots. What he wants to talk about is how you can use the physical environment to increase the collaboration between people in the firm, how you can arrange workspaces and qualities of that space so that it will encourage teamwork and people to interact with each other instead of be in their own little silos. And he was interested also in the way that the building could demonstrate their brand, could communicate to their clients and people who visit. What is the ethos of this company? Are we a creative company? Are we an edgy company? Are we a staid, very traditional, very conservative company? What are we like? Who are we as a company? And that could be conveyed in the quality of the physical environment. So he gets on that committee and he works with the architect. The architect freaking loves him. They bond immediately and he becomes a really critical part of that committee. And they design the whole building and they build the whole building and then the company inhabits that building. And he's had the time of his life. It was wonderful. It was just great to do all that. But after they move in, he like goes back to, you know, just being the IT guy, taking care of fixing everybody's computer problems. So he's at his desk, I don't know, a month or so after they're in the building, and the vice president of the entire company comes down to visit him and says, you know, I hear from people that were on that committee that you were really spectacular in terms of helping us get this building right, and that you were really interested in things like collaboration and team building and how we work together, and that you were really very conscious of our brand and how that's communicated to our clients. And, you know, your interest in all those things that you demonstrated there makes me think maybe you have management potential. So we have a management training program, and we thought it would be appropriate maybe for you to join that and maybe have a different route through the company. And so he got in that management training program, and he said, told me standing there by the bread counter in Whole Foods, to make a long story short, I now am that vice president. I've been extremely successful in my career. He said, little did I know at the time that architecture and society was the most practical course I took in my whole university career in terms of making my career better. It gave me opportunities that if I had not taken that class, I would never have had. I would not be where I am as a successful executive in a large company if it were not for what I learned in architecture and society. That's really cool, isn't it? I mean, I was like about to pee in my pants. I was so, dude, let me hug you. I mean, it was great. But the truth is, this is valuable, potent material. It actually can make a big difference in your conception of the world, in your understanding of the way things work, in your ability to commandeer everyday aspects of life and make them effective in the way you want them to be. This is an amazing tool. So familiarizing you with the discipline of architecture is not just so you can go to a cocktail party and tell somebody the difference between Baroque and Rococo architecture. I mean, honestly, that's not going to happen. You're not going to be able to get that out of this class. But you will be able to get a lot of very, very useful information about the environment you live in, how it affects your life, your perceptions, your community, and how it can be an effective tool for accomplishing things in your life. So the first reason we do this course, the first reason you should take this course, is to familiarize you with the discipline of architecture. The second reason is to increase your environmental awareness and your visual vocabulary, your ability to see things deeply and fully, which honestly, this is a really, really important thing to get. And this, again, as visual arts, this is very, very important in the visual arts, that you learn to be able to really see and observe and experience things thoroughly. Now, I personally think that life is better the more you know about lots of different things. That there are many, many things out there that you can live your whole life and know nothing about it. In fact, you can think it's stupid. But if you just knew something about it, you would understand it, and it would be interesting, and it would enrich your life. And definitely architecture is one of those things. But for example, I go to UT football games, and for a long time I had these particular seats, and the people behind me, they were always at the game and we always interacted. But one time they weren't there, and they'd given their tickets to these two little old ladies who were British. And so they came to the football game. They had no idea what football was about. This made no sense at all to them. So instead of interacting with these real groupies behind us who we were accustomed to enjoying the game together with, instead we got these two ladies who are clueless. And even though I would try to explain a few things about the game, if you know nothing about football, oh my God, it's boring. It's just a whole bunch of people scrambling around, and then they stop for a long time. And then, you know, then they scramble around for a little while, and then they stop for another long time. And you have no idea what's going on. Football is stupid if you don't know anything about it. But if you know about it, it can be amazing. It can be an addiction. It can be wonderful. It can be exciting. It can make your blood run. And, it's consuming. So the point I'm making is that if you know something about something, it becomes much more interesting. You become a connoisseur. You become a gourmet. Art is exactly the same way. You know, it's sometimes really sad to go to an art museum and you see somebody who's, they brought their family, they're going to expose their kids to art. They don't know crap about art. And they're walking around the museum and like, another picture. They don't know anything. And it's just inaccessible. It makes no sense at all to them. Boring. But if they knew about art, art again is something that can be so fascinating, so intellectually stimulating and rich. So I came from a family where my father was a huge football fan, and my mother was an art majored in art here at UT. I don't know how these two human beings ever got together. Complete mystery to me. Had to have been hot sex. I mean, that's the only thing I can figure out. But they had no particular interest in common with each other. So all the time we were growing up, you know, we would all go to the football game together. My mother didn't want to be left out. We'd all go to the football game, but us kids and my dad would all just, you know, be all over football. And my mother would be there bored all the time. And then we would go, especially on vacation, we'd go to art museums. And my dad didn't want to be left out, so he'd troop along to the art museum too. And my mother and us kids, we'd all be into the art and talking about it. My dad would be bored. You know, can we go to lunch now? Always just kind of like, this is stupid. And then a weird thing happened. When all the kids left home, and my mom and my dad were just left there together, and they thought, whoa, I can't go to the football game and talk to my kids anymore. You're the only one here to talk to. And my mother could say, I can't go to the art museum and talk to my kids anymore. You're the only one I have to talk to. So they kind of made a pact, and they started learning more about each other's interests. And I can remember one Saturday, they'd come up for a UT football game, and, you know, they're at my house, and they had just come back from a trip to Europe, and my mother had seen all, they'd been in Paris, they went to the Quai d'Orsay Museum, which is Impressionist painting, which is her favorite thing ever. And she had seen this particular painting that she just loved. It's Luncheon on the Grass by Edward Manet. It's also a painting I really love. And so we're kibitzing about that. And my dad, in his new mode, is saying, okay, I get it. I saw that painting. It's pretty. But I don't see it. Every painting in that whole museum was pretty. What made this one different? And we said, oh, man, there is a huge political statement being made there. There's a huge statement being made about gender and about gender treatment. And there's a huge statement being made about changing social mores. And there's a huge statement being made about the hypocrisy of the upper classes. And it's political. And my dad's like, duh, you're kidding me. That, you know, and but when he understood all that, and we even got out my big art history book by Janssen, and we looked at that painting. Yeah, it's there. Yeah, I see it. And suddenly, it was exciting. It was interesting to him. The more he knew, the more it meant something. We go to the football game that night, and I'm accustomed to my mother being bored to tears the whole way through. But my dad is spouting on. My dad knew everything. He'd read all the magazines. He knew the personal profiles of every player, what their high school was, who their coach was. I mean, he always knew everything. And so he's talking about, oh, yeah, you see the tight end there? Yeah, his father was a football coach at his high school. And the quarterback, yeah, that he went to the same high school. He'd been passing the same guy all these years. And, oh, you know, my mother's like, whoa, dude, this is like gossip. Cool. You know, and she'd be like, oh, yeah, they're human beings. They have personalities. They came from places. And the way the offense is being staged takes advantage of that particular personal relationship between these two human beings. That's interesting to her, and she found a way to love football. By the time my parents passed away, they were like tight with each other around their interests. My mother could talk football great. Oh my God, can't believe it, but she was really good talking football. And my dad could talk a reasonable game of art. So, you know, it worked out. Now, this is, people miss so much in the world if they don't have the interest in finding out something that will then make them excited, stimulated, provoke new ideas, new feelings in them. And this has to do with anything. It can be about food. You know, if you just, I'm sorry, but if you just eat at McDonald's all the time, or you just eat like stupid fast food, and you don't actually ever understand nutrition, and you don't understand where sources of food come from, and you don't understand, you know, cultures and how they embed their cultural values in food, and how different foods, their flavors, and, you know, damn, you're just like missing out on a lot of life. I mean, a little kid will take, you know, a handful of sugar pops, put them in their mouth, and taste the sweet, and you see this big freaking grin. This is amazing. This is exciting. This is wonderful. But wouldn't it be sad if a kid never ate anything but sugar pops for their entire life? I mean, that would be sad. And actually, we as human beings are meant to graduate from sugar pops to, I don't know, ice cream and hamburgers, and then graduate to pizza, and then maybe graduate to tortellini and sushi. And, you know, it's a way of the more you learn, the more you experience, the more you want to learn and experience about food, and it makes your life better. So the second thing we're trying to do with this course, to increase your environmental experience and awareness and observation skills and so on, is this stuff is around you every day of your life. This architecture is everywhere. If you're not absorbing it, then you're missing something. And so it's to make you aware of all those things and to see them in a much more intense and appropriate way. Now, this also has a large practical application. Being more observant, seeing deeper, seeing beyond the surface, being able to understand and perceive a range of things is good for your brain. It makes you smarter to do that. And that's why the state of Texas requires that you take a visual and performing arts elective, because there are things you learn in studying the visual arts that you would not learn in all the thermodynamics classes or all the statistics classes you could take in college. It's a piece of your brain that is exercised here that makes you better at being a professional, at being a human being. And if you don't exercise that piece of your brain, you're less capable. Very interesting, Stanford Medical School now requires all medical students to take an art history class, because if you're going to be a good diagnostician as a doctor, you need to be able to observe color. Not just that's red and that's blue, but what shade of red is that? Is it a brownish red? Is it a yellowish red? And by studying visual arts, people are forced to improve their visual acuity, their powers of observation. And those powers of observation are completely transferable to being a doctor and trying to diagnose an illness and being able to see what somebody's spleen or their kidney looks like and exactly what color that is and how that is supposed to look and then how it does look if it's malformed. These are important capabilities, and this class will help you be more observant, see things better, deeper than you might otherwise. And that's transferable. Okay. First reason we teach this class is to improve your understanding of the discipline of architecture. The second thing is to increase your environmental awareness and powers of observation. The third reason we teach this class, and this is my shtick, I want to make you an activist. I want to make you care. I want to make you want to make the world a better place through architecture, through physical environment. And this could be in a variety of different ways. How many of you would vaguely consider yourself an environmentalist? You think issues of the environment are important. Okay? Good. How many of you think that you believe in social justice, in equity, in opportunity, in people having strong sense of community and living together in a positive way? How many people care about that? Okay. I'm telling you that this discipline is absolutely critical in both of those and a dozen other kind of larger social issues. Are you aware that 50% of all energy consumed in the world is consumed in buildings? 50%, way more than in vehicles. We're always harping on SUV and gas guzzling and things like that. That's only about 30% of the energy consumption in the world is in vehicles. 50% is in buildings. If we make buildings more energy efficient, it reduces greenhouse gases, it reduces global warming. There are huge environmental benefits of architecture working in a environmentally responsible way. Likewise, often the sense of alienation or the sense of community, the sense of belonging or the sense of not belonging, equity or non-equity have often to do with the way we arrange ourselves in cities, how we build our neighborhoods and communities, how people either are encouraged to interact or are discouraged from interacting with each other. These are very potent tools for equity and social justice and building a sense of community. And if we embed those in our physical environment, it assists us. If we don't embed those in our physical environment, it can be a huge deterrent to social equity or opportunity. So these things have consequences, and I want to make you care about those consequences. So to wrap up here, this is where in most lectures I would give you a Twitter card question. But since you don't have a 3x5 card and you don't know your TA, we can't have one today. But I'm going to tell you what I would ask as a Twitter card question anyway, because I want you to think about it. And this will give you a trial run for you engaging with that. So if I were asking a Twitter card question, I would ask, I want you to choose one of four options here. The first option is, I get it. I understand. Architecture is something that profoundly influences my life, and I really am anxious to know more about it. Or the second option is, I kind of hear what you're saying, and that's probably true for some people, but that's not me. This is not something that's going to be important to me. I just have to take this as a requirement. I'm going to do it. Or the third option is, I think this is bullshit. I didn't believe anything you said today, and I'll just suffer through this class. Or the fourth option is, I don't have an opinion yet, but wait, I will. And I want to encourage you to, if you feel one of those things, that's fine. I want you to think what you think. I'm not trying to indoctrinate you here. But don't start pulling your notes together yet. Sit, I've got another 3 minutes. So one thing is, I want you to keep an open mind. We're going to be looking at lots of things this semester that hopefully will excite you and make you very interested. And we're probably going to look at some things this semester that even make you angry or upset you. And the whole idea is that everybody won't respond the same way. If I played Luciano Pavarotti singing a big tenor part from The Barber of Seville, probably there'd be some of you that would be very angry about having to listen to that for 10 minutes, and there'd be some of you that were in heaven. And that's fine. That's what the arts are about. There would also be, if I played 10 minutes of Lady Gaga, there would be some of you who would just think, oh, that woman is so great, that is so cool. And there'd be some of you who say, whew, that's shit. And that's okay. That's what the arts are all about. But it's not fair to say that Luciano Pavarotti is not quality music. That is very, very high quality music. And it is not fair to say that Lady Gaga is not high quality music. That is very high quality music. Both of those are huge talents. I want you to keep an open mind and realize, as we're looking at things, that this is important architecture. I may like it, I may not like it. It's very important for you to have those reactions, but still, it's important to keep an open mind. So that's one thing. The other thing, though, is that this is, from my point of view, totally different than music. I mean, you can decide to listen to opera or not decide to listen to opera. That's, who cares? You can decide to listen to contemporary pop music, or you can decide that's junk. I don't want to listen to contemporary pop music. That's your decision to do. But there is no way you can decide not to experience architecture. You will experience architecture in your life. You'll be put in a position of it influencing you every day of your life. So it's not a choice. And that makes it completely different than other arts. Give me a break. Okay, that's it. See you next time. Handouts, they're at the back.
Oh, okay.
On those music stands at the back. Hey.
I'm on a wait list. I think I'm like number two.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we have to kind of stick with the wait list thing when we do the wait list thing. And okay. It's taught every semester, so if you don't get in this time.
Yeah, are you number two?
Yeah.
Okay, so is it just, there's only three people on the wait list.
See, once I send it to wait list, then I have to let,